When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Rota Report podcast in association with the Southern Community Soup Kitchen. It's Gav and you join us ahead of the Swansea game. Lots has gone on this week, as you might have already heard. We did a podcast after the last game, which died a death because Michael Beale decided to get himself sacked. So we reacted to that. So you'll have already heard all about that on the last pod. But on this one, we're going to chat about football, which is nice because for some reason, we've gone right off the boil and everything in the last 9 weeks has been about anything but the football. Joining me is Chris. Hello, mate.
Here I go. Again, we haven't had much to talk about, but, you know, we'll squeeze stuff in.
Well, what's the latest in the world of Michael Beale, eh? I mean, we've got to start with this because there's a couple of bits I want to touch on before we do actually launch into the Swansea game. So maybe I was lying a little bit there.
Like I said, now it's happened.
Well, when we released the last podcast, we recorded the last podcast even, it was prior to this mad story which came out about Michael Beale and his Twitter burner account. And we can't not talk about this because it's just ludicrous, really. I mean, for anybody who doesn't know, and where have you been if you don't know what this is? But Michael Beale, it appears, from a Twitter account which he had set up a number of years ago, I think maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago, for a podcast about coaching, by all accounts, was tweeting and reaching, some of the accounts he tweeted were ours. He was tweeting Rota Report, alternative angles of the situation between him and Hume from the game last week. He was retweeting posts from, I think it was from a Coventry fan saying who would take the Sunderland job, who would take the Sunderland owner seriously with his toxic fan base and all the rest of it. But interesting timeline of events. And as it appears, he I think he tried to clear it up by hiding who he was, but there were historic tweets from other accounts pointing that this was definitely Michael Beale. And then as soon as somebody tried to rumble him, the account disappeared, but obviously it was too late. People had grabbed screenshots and they're out there now for the world to see forever. I mean, have you ever heard of anything like this before? I mean, regardless of your thoughts on Beale, like, it's just crackers, isn't it? Like, what was he thinking?
Well, I've never heard anything like this before, but bizarrely, even though I've never seen anything like this before, it's still very Sunderland. I mean, it's yeah, like the type of mad thing that only happens to our club. It doesn't seem to happen to other clubs. I don't know what it is. I don't know why we attract this sort of crap, but we're just like a magnet for weird and wonderful stuff. But it's just mad. I mean, you wonder if, you know, during the interview process that how much do you diligence they did on stuff like this, if it was true. But actually, even to muddy the waters, and I might be getting this wrong, but I'm sure I saw a little thing today that said Mike Beale's team, and I don't know what his team would be, had refuted the claims in the Athletic or something like that. That it was, or they reported that he refuted the claims that it was him or his account or his burner account or whatever it was. But even that's a bit ridiculous because all the kind of evidence was there that it was him or it was his.
Yeah.
It could have been, you know, his team that described in the Athletic. I don't know what that is.
He doesn't have a team. Exactly. Let's be honest. He doesn't have a team.
Exactly.
Does he?
I mean, I don't know what that was. But yeah, it's just all a bit odd. And, you know, for someone to be doing that and given the opposite, kind of bigging him up, you know, against every message that goes out that's trying to knock him is just utterly bizarre. I mean, managers are, you know, people in football have got to have a thick skin. You know what I mean? It's It's that thing where, you know, it doesn't matter what you do. I mean, Christ, I mean, we were talking in the chat the other day, people were talking about Peter Reid getting stick when we're seventh in the Premier League, for random stuff. So, you've got to know what's coming your way. But yeah, you thought it was all over. I mean, we did the pod to react to it and we were like, all right, well, you know, whatever your feelings, it's a bit of relief that it's all over. And then like within the next 24 hours or whatever, that kicked off. And it's like, well, Christ, will this just end? So we can, I mean, hopefully, I mean, we're going to talk about the footy again in a bit, but hopefully getting back to a game this weekend and getting back to the footy, you'll manage to put that all behind us. But yeah, it's just strange. And the sad thing is, you know, he didn't need to do this. I mean, okay. Like I said, that statement's come out to say it wasn't him, but you know, everything points to it being him, but he didn't have to do it. And he's by doing that. I mean, okay, like his performances as a manager at Rangers and Sunderland has, you know, obviously put him down the pecking order anyway. It's going to chuck him down the football ladder. But doing this has almost made him unemployable in a way. I feel really sorry for him. Kind of, you know, he shouldn't, through just doing something daft like this, he shouldn't be. And I don't think he will be out of the game. He's probably got enough pals, you know, the likes of Steven Gerrard and all that, still rate him and all this sort of stuff. But yeah, in some ways, especially as a manager, I think that's probably it for him in some ways.
If you're a manager at any level, why would you subject yourself to social media? I can just about stomach it because I have to because of this podcast. And it's like, if you were in the position of not just Sunderland manager, but Rangers manager, because that timeline was also a lot of him defending his Rangers record. If you're in that position, why on earth would you subject yourself to Twitter or Instagram or any of these other platforms? I think, to be honest, you said you feel sorry for him. That's the feeling I had when I seen all of this. I was like, I feel sorry for the bloke, like, but in a kind of pathetic way, like,
yeah,
like, what are you doing? Yeah. Like, get off social media. Yeah. And what it points to me is a fragility. Mm. So he's took a lot of knocks. You've got to think the last sort of 2 years of his life have been him and his reputation being kind of thrown out there to the wolves and people pulling them apart on social media. And a big part of that, you know, he's reading all of this and he knows about it and he's aware of what's being said. And I totally get that desire to defend yourself, but this is not the way to do it.
Mm.
And, you know, I think you're right. I think as a manager, I think he's done. And I felt I kind of felt that before because I think the last two jobs have shown that he's possibly... we've seen it down the years. I remember Paul Clement, who was Ancelotti's assistant at Chelsea. He had a series of jobs that never went well. Rennie Meulensteen, who worked under Sir Alex at Man United. Really highly rated coaches who've dipped their toe when it comes to management and it's just not worked for whatever reason. And... like, all of this, what's gone on, I just think, even if he wanted to manage again, like, I don't think anybody would want to touch him, but why would he want to manage again? Why would he want to put himself through this? I think really it tells me, and this is something I was kind of musing on the other day, but he took the Sunderland job far too soon after leaving Rangers, and he really needed a palate cleanser, I think. I think I can't blame him for taking it.
Exactly.
Like, I would take the Sunderland job too. But if you sit back and you look at it, you think he needed a palate cleanser. He needed to go to a smaller club, maybe down the bottom end of the Championship that we could work with, top end League One, you know, like a lot of good coaches have done. You know, the guy at Ipswich did it. You know, good coaches have went down to that level and managed just to kind of recover because it was a big job that he left and he came into a big job. And all of this just, to me, points to a mental fragility. And I totally get it, by the way. Like, this isn't me having a pop. I understand why he might be in a bad place and why he might be exposing himself to these things. Mm. But, like, he needs a major reset, I think. I think he just needs to go away for a bit and enjoy his life again and maybe fall back in love with football because what he's done to himself here points to just torturing himself, really. He must genuinely have been browsing everything, reading everything. He was tweeting us. Somebody recovered one of the screenshots and he had tweeted us before he'd even been appointed. I didn't know this until it's been pointed out to us, but he sent a tweet to the Roker Report account defending his Rangers record I think it was on the 16th of December. It was before he'd even took the job. And that's like, bloody hell. Like, he was already on the defensive, probably reading all the stuff about himself. Can you remember when Alex Neil was in post and he was kind of asked about these things and he was just like, I don't care. Not interested. Don't read it. Couldn't give a shit.
Yeah.
And like, I don't understand why any manager wouldn't have that approach. Or certainly, you know, successful managers, I'm sure they don't go on social media and read what people are saying and then reply to it. I just feel sorry for the bloke.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, it's just sad, really.
Well, look, I mean, look, in terms of taking the Sunderland job, I think, you know, a manager who's got anything about himself, you know, with the position we were in just outside the playoffs, and potentially you're a Premier League manager within the first 6 months of you taking the job, you know, potentially, you know, that you've got
to you need to check your ego when you're thinking that way, maybe.
You've got to back yourself. You've got to have that arrogance. If you're in that position and someone's saying, look, take this job and we'll offer you a two and a half year contract.
Yeah.
And look, there's a contract, big money. Come up to a big club. You could be a Premier League manager within 6 months. You've got to back yourself. You're not turning that down. So from his point of view, you can't. I don't think you can knock him at all for actually taking the job in the first place. But when you were talking there, it did remind me of his comment that kind of caused so much fuss when he was talking about outside noise. And you know that actually now thinking about that comment, you know, most managers, you know, when they're asked that question about, oh, you know, what do you think about fan reaction to this or that, like most managers shrug their shoulders, or pretty much 99% of managers shrug their shoulders and go, I don't know what you're talking about. As in, you know, they don't look at it, they don't read it. But he was clearly sitting in that chair, having read it all, and he knew exactly what they were talking about because he reacts to it, and he kind of wanted to answer all of the criticism that was out there, which is a bizarre thing to want to do, because like you said, you put yourself in a position like that. And I think we kept saying it on pods that, you know, if he got results, nothing else really matters. If he won 10 of those 13 and we were right in the mix of the playoffs and we gave the Mags at the very least a really good game, there'd have been no problem.
No.
At that point, you don't need to look at what people are saying, because, you know you're getting the results, and that's all you need to focus on. So, like I said, I mean, he seemed, it's just a complete waste of energy. I mean, look, I think most people who listen regularly to these pods knows my take on social media, and that it's a complete waste of time and a waste of energy. But for someone in his position, especially so, because how much is that going to drain you reading all that crap day in, day out of, you know, people just laying into you? And, you know, it doesn't matter whether you read it or not, you know the only thing that's going to fix it is getting results. But unfortunately, he's been rumbled a little bit, and it'll be interesting to see where he pops back up in the game at some point, because I'm sure he will. It'll just be interesting to see where.
Did you read his statement, which was released by the League Managers Association, or not?
I briefly flicked over it, where it was quite, you know, he was grateful of the club, and he did say that he was appreciated that, you know, the fans got behind him at one point, you know, with his niece and stuff, and all that, from memory.
Yeah, it was an interesting line, really, because he never mentioned the support generally. It was just, to the fans, I would like to thank you for the support shown to me and my family during the recent game against Plymouth Argyle. In this gesture, you showed huge empathy and warmth, and that is something I will never forget. But not anything else, really, because there wasn't any real support from, unfortunately. But yeah, said he was disappointed to have left, thanked the players for being excellent to work with, and said he'll follow their progress. Just all the usual stuff, really. Said thanks to the staff at the training ground, at the stadium. It was interesting, the line about the owner and the sporting director. He said, the communication with Kirill, Christian and the board was always open and honest, and I would like to place on record my sincerest thanks for their support during a tough period, personally. I mean, there's not much else he could have said, really. He's been here 2 minutes, lost his job, is what it is. But there was no real defence there. It kind of just felt like, didn't work out. Thanks, everybody. I'm away. Quickly, before we move on, because we know we're not appointing somebody anytime soon unless something drastically changes. Oh. But you'll have seen the names being bandied around already. Will Still, again. I think he's been interviewed again, talking about potentially making a move to England. And he said a really ambitious championship job would be appealing to him, but he's also been linked to West Ham. A lot of fans are mentioning Steve Cooper, who was obviously out of work since he left Forest. Mark Robbins, I've seen quite a few people mentioning his name. Do you think any of those are even in the thinking for this job? Because I don't. I think we're going to be looking at somebody we've never heard of from an obscure league. I just can't see it being an obvious candidate.
Yeah, it's a strange one. I mean, first off the bat, I mean, they've created a bit of a problem now because they've now got 2.5 months of this, of who's next. And it's going to be a nightmare because already, I mean, it's only been a couple of days, 48 hours, probably a bit more than that. Already, all the names are getting bandied about. There's pieces out there saying, you know, who's next with a short list and with a bunch of names. People are going through who the book at the top of the bookies. The worst thing is the people going on about, oh, please don't let it be him and please don't let it be him. I mean, you could go on all day going like that and the messages coming through. It's just, and it's going to be draining for 2.5 months. And the thing is, Mike Dodds as well, every press conference, is there any update on the manager situation? It's going to be every press conference. It's going to be every week. And it's going to be a massive distraction. Now we've got, let's assume that they don't make an announcement until after the last day of the season. Like I said, it's 2 and a bit months now of constant speculation, of constant questioning of the club. And they might be in a position where they can just, you know, shut themselves off to it. But the problem is that the club's engulfed in it. And you've got the players as well. I mean, there might be players out of contract this season or thinking about signing new contracts. Or if you listen to Ian Hart, you've got some of our best players thinking, are they going to move? Are they going to be away? Now, if we then wait until after the last game of the season, have all of those players made their minds up before the club have had a chance to put someone in place? And this is the worrying thing now. We've got a bunch of things to sort out for the summer. And you're talking about players coming in as well. You're going to have conversations. There might be potentially players we're looking at who are out of contract in the summer and we're talking to them. And if they're in that situation, their first question is going to be, well, who's in charge next season? And we'll either say, well, we can't tell you or we don't know. And there's so much we need to get sorted in the next 2.5 months for next season. Regardless, I mean, you know, who's to say that, you know, like you said, the weird and wonderful, you know, the Sunderland chaos theory. If Mike Dodds takes us on that charge into the playoffs at the end of the season and we're in the playoffs and we somehow kind of, you know, scrape through and get promoted, bizarrely. But if that happens and we're trying to prepare for a season in the Premier League, I mean, how does that change who we're looking at? Does that change the shortlist or does that not change the shortlist? They've put themselves in such a strange position now. And I agree with you. I think it's going to be someone, not one of the usual suspects. And the problem is with that, if that is the case, which I fully expect it to turn out like that, are we going to end up in a similar position to when we appointed Mike Beale, where you've got a lot of fans saying, why is, you know, what has this fella got on his CV that says he can manage Sunderland Football Club? You know, so the lesson from the Mike Beale affair in some ways is, does someone have to have a CV that's good enough where Sunderland fans aren't kind of offside before a ball's kicked? Because that seemed to be the biggest argument with people who disagreed with that appointment before a game was even played under Mike Beale, that the question mark was, what has he done to warrant being Sunderland manager? And when the club don't come out and really kind of fully explain their thinking, then the kind of backlash started. So the timing of the whole thing coming to the end of the season and preparing for next season, and like you said, you've got big players like Jack Clark trying to make their mind up, and if it's all up in the air and it's all, nobody knows what's going to go on. I mean, if you're Jack Clark and you get an offer from West Ham or a top 10 Premier League side, or even someone who's already secured their Premier League place for next season, you'd likely be off, wouldn't you? So, I mean, who knows? To stop all this happening, the ideal thing is that you line someone up and you almost announce them, where you say, you know, let's say, what, it's the end of February now, so middle of March, in 3 or 4 weeks' time, the club makes an announcement and says, this manager is going to take over from the 5th of May or something. I think that might be the day after the last day of the season. So, you know, as soon as the season finishes, this person takes charge, players know where they are, fans know what's coming, And that's the ideal situation, but I don't think that's going to happen.
No, I've got the feeling that it'll just be an appointment made once, and even if it's a manager in employment, it'll be made once they've finished their season, they've spoke to their club, told them they're leaving, that sort of thing. Yeah. I think that's what's going to be. Yeah. Interestingly, what you just said there about whether people would question the appointment given if it wasn't somebody particularly proven or something like that. I think if we'd appointed, like you remember back in December when we were replacing Mowbray and you had the guy who I think was at one of the French clubs, Sable, I can't remember his bloody name. Sable, and there was the guy in the Swedish league. Like, can't remember their names. Obviously, I'm useless with names. But if we'd appointed one of them, strangely, I think they would have got more patience because people would have... It's different. If you look at our record of appointing managers, we've never went that way. It's strange for me to sit here and go, I'm expecting us to do that because we've never done it. As far as I can remember, we've never made a sort of obscure appointment, have we? They've all pretty much been like well-known names in the game or managers from the lower league, sort of, you know, your Mowbray's, Grace, and people who've been around the block. Like, we've never went out and just gone abroad and went, okay, him, somebody no one's heard of from a league outside of these shores. We've never done that. And I just think if we went that way and it was someone we knew very little about, I think they would have got more patience than Beale.
I disagree because... Let's say we get someone completely obscure with a CV with next to nought on it, except for taking a Swedish team to the top half of their table or something like that, and they lost their first three games. There would be the question marks would be saying, "What has this fella got to manage Sunderland? Why is he in charge of Sunderland?" The knives would be out because it's prove to us he hasn't done anything in the game. So why is he Sunderland manager and he's lost his first three games? I mean, it's all about results. And if they start losing, there'll be all that thrown at them that they haven't got a good enough record to manage our club.
Who will it be then? It'll probably be Big Sam or Warnock or Roy Hodgson. But I don't know who would satisfy people. Anyways, I'm sick of talking about managers. We can park that one for a little bit.
Is this going to be every 20 pod odd minutes ago till the end of the season?
Yeah, we did say 20 odd minutes ago that we were previewing a game and I promised we wouldn't spend too long on managers. And then here we are. Never mind. Swansea, we're playing at the weekend. To be fair, this crack all week with Beale and managers, and that's just been a giant distraction. And it might not be a bad thing, actually, because the last two results have been that shit, and performances have been pretty poor, that a bit of a distraction might have helped everybody. But we are playing Swansea, a team who we have a terrible record against. Me and you were talking about this before we came on. We've got one win in 13 games against Swansea, two in 21, and since 2011... we've only won twice in 14 games against Swansea. Our record is terrible. However, they're not doing too great in the league. They've had a bit of a rocky season, sort of hovering just above the relegation zone, actually, sitting on 36 points after 33 games. Their fans really aren't having this new manager, who I think came from Notts County.
Mm.
So they're in a precarious position, but that doesn't give me any hope, or I don't feel any more confident knowing all of that. Because whenever we seem to play these shitty teams down the bottom end, we don't turn up. So I don't know what to expect. You've got the, you know, will the players turn it on for Dodsy again? Are they going to play with a bit more of a pep in their step now Beale's gone? Or is it just going to be a continuation of the problems we've had for a few weeks now? What do you see happening here with us returning to the stadium alight as well?
No, well, that's it. I think for anybody who might venture on the site early Saturday to read the preview, I've already... stuck some words in there about the fact that, you know, if Mike Dodds was able to choose, you know, a time when he was given the reins as kind of interim manager again, he would have said politely, could I have a home game, please? Because based on our away form and, you know, the fact that he took over for three games earlier in the season and he got 6 points out of the two home games that he took charge of against West Brom and Leeds, when actually at the time, I remember everyone thinking, you know, we were in a bit of a mess. Mowbray, it was 2 wins in 9, and then we had tough opposition at home in those two games. I mean, I think we would have been happy with 3 points out of the two games, but to get 6 out of them, and he looked back to that, and our recent home form has been pretty good. We've won the last two beaten Plymouth and Stoke and scored those six goals, because those were the two games where we played those two and there was Borough in between, and we came out of that those three games thinking getting 7 points out of nine, you know, things might be looking up. So Mike Dodds has got a lot to go back to in terms of he knows he's taken charge of the team when we've won two off the bounce earlier in the season. We're on a run of winning the last two at home and scoring six. So look, I think we're in a good place at home, and I think actually there's a bit of kind of with the players we've got playing at the stadium, like especially this season, apart from the odd daft slip up like the one against Hull and Coventry was a bad day, and we've had a few in Huddersfield especially, that was a bad day. So we have these blips, but more often than not, these players know how to play at home this season. I think we've got like the seventh best home record in the division or something like that. And you know, like I said, I just think at home we're a different proposition. When I was talking about those two home games, obviously the Leeds one was completely different in how we set up. We had a game plan for Leeds. But I imagine Mike Dodds will be going back to the West Brom game, how we set up for that, and Plymouth as well, because Plymouth and Stoke, you could probably put in the same bracket as Swansea, although actually Swansea have got a better record than certainly Plymouth and Stoke away from home, but not by kind of a huge amount, because obviously they're down there. It's not going to be, you know, it's not like we're seeing a new manager or anything like that. Mike Dodds has been there. He's done it this season at home. He knows the way the team's set up. The players know what they're doing as well. I think there'll just be a lot of muscle memory in there playing at home and attacking sides. So, yeah, before we get on to Swansea, I'm pretty confident.
Oh, I wish I was.
Oh, behave.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I feel like you're right. We've been good at home this season. And I think the players all turn up for Mike Dodds. I think, obviously, they showed early in the season that they like playing for him, particularly at home. But there's just something not right about this in my head. I don't know. I've got a really bad feeling about this game. I don't know. Probably just me being a bit dramatic, like, because we've had a shit week. But I don't know. I don't feel good about this game.
Just on that, you're talking about the players have got something to prove. I mean, let's say, because we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but we kind of speculated when we talked about Bill leaving that it was down to the atmosphere on the training ground and something's not quite right there. Now, if the players have had some sort of part in it in terms of providing feedback that, you know, it's not working or anything, or you know, something along those lines, if that's the case and the atmosphere hasn't been great and now it's back to Mike Dodds, you would think that the players have got this bit of freedom back, almost, where they're not worried about what's going on in the training ground, or they're not kind of unhappy about anything in the background. It's all back to kind of how it was. So in terms of having something to prove, you'd think that having that kind of off their shoulders, and you'd like to think that the players come out and play with a bit more freedom and a bit more swagger about themselves, because generally you'd expect the players to be a bit happier if that was the case.
What do you reckon he's going to do in terms of making it his team again? Because if you remember, I think he played Job up front in those two games where we won under him last time. Do you reckon we might see the return of that? It'll be interesting, won't it? It'll be interesting to see whether we kind of revert back to the way we played maybe really early in the season. Because like, I don't know how much of... This is what we don't know, right? This is what we don't know. Is how much input have these coaches had into the Beale version of Sunderland? Like, and how much of it do they think is working? And how much of it do they think, oh, we need to tweak that? And then you've obviously got the situation with the forwards, like three goals in 13 games. We're back to rotating them again. Burstow came in the other day and was pretty poor. Roussin can't seem to get a run of games, which kind of indicates they're not sure about him, in my opinion. Like, what are they going to do in terms of just setting up? Because it has been working at home, hasn't it? That's the thing. It's like you kind of look back at the recent performances at home. It worked. You just said it before. Six goals in two games. Yeah. So are we just going to continue on with what we've been doing? Or are we going to like look at the team like we did against Leeds and go, you can see Mike Dodds' imprint on this side?
It's funny. I mean, I might be thinking too much into it, but I'm just looking at the games that Mike Dodds was in charge of earlier in the season. He had really specific game plans for West Brom and Leeds. I mean, to the point that actually it really surprised us. it really, you know, kind of shocked quite a lot. Shocked me, actually, considering the previous time when he taken charge. But he kind of really had a game plan. I mean, that Leeds game was really one of our, I think, one of our performances of the season, even though we didn't play.
Yeah,
we didn't,
right up there.
We didn't play with our kind of usual attack and swagger. We were really patient and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, looking at those two games, and when I've done a little bit of reading about Swansea, I mean, they've brought in Luke Williams apparently because he was in the Russell Martin kind of bucket of, you know, types of manager where he likes possession-based football. And I think I remember him back in at Notts County where I'm sure it was a fan or something asked him about short corners. And I'm sure he gave this.
Yeah, I remember that.
And he gave this kind of long answer about, well, you know, about statistics and, you know, keeping the football and why would you just stick it into the mixer and all this sort of stuff. And I think he got like a round of applause or something after he answered it or, you know, something like that. So it seems like they've tried to go back to, you know, something that Swansea were known for years with trying to play good football and possession-based football. And I think they lost a bit of that when Russell Martin went in the summer. It didn't seem like Michael Duff was necessarily the man to do that, and he was really struggling. So they're trying to get that sort of football. And I was looking at some of the possession of some of the previous games, and even though they lost the last one at home to Ipswich, they had like 59% possession in that game. And I was looking at in a game in the middle, they actually got beat at home to Plymouth. This sounds like a very Russell Martin team where they got beat off Plymouth at home 1-0, but had 71% possession.
So, yeah, I'm just looking at it now, 20 shots and they lost 1-0.
Yeah, so yeah. I'm looking at that, and if they're going down that route and they come and try and frustrate and keep the ball, I mean, I think the obvious thing to do, because he's such a pest, is to have Roosen up front and kind of lead the press from the front. But I know what you mean about, you know, he had those two games at home earlier in the season. He played Job in both of them. But I just think if you don't want a side to keep the ball and you want to kind of put a bit of pressure on them and you think you can nick the ball high up the pitch, I just think Roosen's, and I don't necessarily think Roosen's necessarily the best striker to get us a goal and get us in front and all this sort of stuff. I still haven't got a clue who is, to be honest, but yeah, I'd quite like Hamid to get more minutes because I think he's looking better and better, but that's a different subject. But I wouldn't necessarily start Hamid. I'd start Roosen to try and put pressure on them in possession of the football and try and really press them and get them to make a mistake, you know, in their own half.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's going to be about that. How much can we win the ball back when they've got it? Mm. I think there's a lot of teams in the Championship who try to play football out from the back who haven't got the players to do it. And you look at Swansea the last few years, and I just think that's possibly a fair comment about them. And traditionally, it hasn't been, because Swansea have always, in my, sort of recent years anyways, that modern era I'm talking about where we've got a terrible record going back to 2011 or whatever it is, like pretty much every Swansea team I can think of up until the last couple of years has been a really good footballing team who keep the ball and have got a bit of an identity, and they did lose that identity when Martin left. I remember me and you talking before the first game we played them, and we talked a lot about that, about how they've kind of lost their way and they're not really the same version of Swansea. And I imagine they've tried to rescue a bit of that, but I'm just looking at the players they've got. And, like, they've got Jerry Yates up front, who's a decent striker at this level. Jamie Patterson in attack, who's very average Championship player. Ollie Cooper's decent, you know, but they've got a lad called Ronald, who I've never watched, I'll be honest. Just signed him in January, Brazilian. Could be great for all I know. Jay Fulton, Matt Grimes, Ben Cabango at the back, Josh Tymon at left back, Kyle Norton's still there. I know they've got Charlie Patino, they've got Liam Cullen, who's been there a while. Charles Sago Jr., who was a player, was linked with us in January. He signed for Swansea. Joe Allen, still at Swansea. But like, I'm not looking at them and fearing them. I think we've got to, like, we've got to do exactly what you said. We've got to press them when they've got the ball. Because I'm not convinced that against a good press that is necessarily a good enough team to play through it. And I agree with you. Roosen plays up front in that instance. And I'm interested to see more of Mundell as well. Because from what I've seen of him, he looks quite aggressive both with and without the ball. And it'll be his first real taste of the Stadium of Light, or the opportunity to impress. And, you know, he's got a chance now. Let's have a go at it. And he's the type of player who I think if he gets a good run and starts proving himself, he's the type who'll get fans off their seats and people will want to watch him. So I am looking forward to it in that instance. There's something about this game I just can't put my finger on. I hope I'm wrong. It's got the feeling of like that, the first spell that Dodds had in charge where we played against Cheltenham and Doncaster and everyone's expecting us to win at Stadium of Light, and it just has that feeling for me. I don't know, but I hope I'm wrong. I'm not going to predict a win, put it that way. I'm optimistically, I'm saying a draw, a 1-1 draw, and that'll be a disappointing result. Sorry, everyone. We've really flipped roles on this podcast, by the way.
I know.
It was always the other way around.
You're
predicting a win, though, aren't you? I can tell. I can see it in your face.
I love, by the way, how you're already, after one knee-high challenge, you're already describing Mundell as being aggressive off the ball, as he is on the ball. That's about all he's done off the ball, one daft tackle. But no, I mean, seriously, about Mundell, I'm looking forward to seeing him at home. You know, and getting off, you know, in the starting lineup and kind of getting that teams from the off. Because I think with us on the front foot, and again, I mean, I'm going to come back to the same principle, and just because, you know, I think games like this, it just comes back to this, that, you know, if you look at the likes of Mundell, and, you know, if we can get a striker who can nick a goal, or, you know, and commit players forward, or whoever plays behind that front man, whether it's Job, whether it's, you know, whoever he picks in there, maybe Barr. You know, he might rotate it a bit more than we think, you know, in terms of Oshish, or, you know, Chris, he might just throw Chris Rigg in there just to kind of really change it up and freshen it up. But, you know, whoever it is, we've got those forward players. And if we commit players forward, that's been half of, I think, a lot of the problem under Mike Beale, that we didn't commit enough players forward. And I talked about in the previous pods that there was this, the gap was too big between the midfield and the front man. And we never got forward as a team like we did certainly quite a lot last season, where we controlled games by keeping possession and moving up the pitch almost as a team. So you had players in the final third when you got there. At the minute, we haven't got players to hold it up, and it just becomes a bit disjointed when you try and play the ball forward too quickly and you're not ready for it, and you haven't got players who can manage that up top. And again, looking at Swansea, under Williams, they've had 7 games and they've conceded 15 goals in those 7 games. And I just think if you get at this team, they're nervously looking over their shoulder. They're 4 points above the bottom 3. And I was looking at some of their comments from the fans or on the BBC website, and they're really concerned. They're really looking like down the table now, and they're worried about where this run might actually take them. And they need to, they're really under pressure to pick up some points. So look, they're in a really bad run of form. They're nervous because they're looking over their shoulder. They've conceded a lot of goals in the last 7 games. That Luke Williams is the type of manager, he's not going to ditch his principles. I don't think he looks like the man who ditches his principles. He's going to try and play football, and they're going to try and play their way out of this. I mean, honestly, I'm predicting a win. I think it's going to be pretty comfortable. I think Mike Dodds is going to have them up for it. I think the players are going to have their shackles off a little bit. And I honestly think it's going to be a comfortable win.
Dodds ball's back, isn't it? Anyways, we've got some quick fire questions from Twitter. And we're going to be really quick fire with these because there's loads. I only put the tweet up like a minute before we hit record. And people have gone crazy in replying. So thanks everyone who's replied. Sorry if we don't get to yours, but we're going to try our best. We'll start with this one. Steve Rains. Put these in order of most likely to lose in the summer. Clark, Neil, Ballard, Patterson.
Clark, Neil. Who was your Ballard, Patterson?
Yeah.
Poof.
I'd maybe swap Ballard and Neil, possibly.
No, I think that's the right order.
Yeah.
I think that's the right order because I think Ballard at times has looked a bit shaky in games where he's been caught. And I'm not sure Premier League, I think Premier League teams are really analysing that. It'll be a bit, not quite sure yet. Has he got the pace for the Premier League? But I love him. I think he's brilliant. But I just think if you're talking about a Premier League team nicking him, I'm not sure. Patterson, I'm not sure. Honestly, I'm not sure. I think he's decent. I think he's a good keeper, solid keeper. I just don't think people are going to spend 20 million on him or however much it's going to take. And I think the two big ones are Clark and Neil. And with Ian Hart's influence behind it, that's Jack Clark top of the list. And I think if we don't go up, with some of his performances, especially like that one against Plymouth, just need to look at that. I just think Premier League teams are going to be all over Dan Neil if we don't go up this season.
I don't think you've quite gauged quickfire, Chris. Anyways, we'll start. Start again. Carl Bridgewood says, "What would be an achievable or realistic target for the remainder of the season?"
Realistic, where we are, just outside the playoffs.
Achievable. Are we going to nick that sixth place or not?
Well, that's the goal, isn't it? Sixth.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. We're too far off now. Chris Sims. Do you think we'll see Job up front on Saturday? If not, who do you think will start in the nine position? We've just answered that, Rusin.
Yep.
But I wouldn't be surprised to see Job there. David Marjoram says, do you think the squad is stronger or weaker than last season? And why? I'll let you have that.
Oof, good question. My instinct is to say weaker because we haven't got Ahmad, essentially.
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah, I think you're literally that's it. We don't have Ahmad, so... And we had Stewart for like 12 games where he scored 10 goals.
And we had Sims.
Currently it's a lot weaker, yeah.
So we had two strikers.
Yeah, and we had Sims for a bit, yeah. Owen Sarah says, would Dodgy get the job for... I'll start again. This isn't very quick fire at all. I'm contributing. Would Dodgy getting the job full-time ever be a realistic probability? Well, yeah. If he wins every game, he's got the job, won't he? The Pierre Ekwe Appreciation Society says, who has the higher ceiling, Dan Neil or Jack Clark? Ooh, go on. You have that.
I say Dan Neil, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're going to see Dan Neil in like a Liverpool or Arsenal midfield at some point.
Not much in it.
No, not at all. Sean Cottrell, if we got promoted to the Premier League, how do you think the club would approach it in terms of recruitment? That's a pod on its own. But, Jesus. There'd just be lots of more younger players, but all... ones that cost a lot more money than what we've probably been spending in the Championship.
Yeah.
Just a higher quality of young player. Yeah. I think it would be the same approach, but in a different league.
Yeah. I just think they've probably got a list of players who were slightly out of reach because we're still a Championship club and it's just going to be the next level up, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Jay Hunter-Smith has said, can we achieve the playoffs with Dodds?
Well,
we can, but I don't know if
mathematically we can. Theoretically, probably not.
Martin Bell says, do you think that we will see Dodds leave in the summer?
Well, he's just getting a promotion, didn't he, when Mowbray was sacked. And I think working with Speakman, and not many coaches actually have job security like that where managers get sacked and they stay on.
Correct.
So that's a big incentive.
Depends if you want to be a manager, doesn't it? Yeah. Michael Bowers has said, he has a shout for head coach in the summer I've not seen many mention. Danny Rule from Chef Wed, if they go down. Good shout. He's impressed a lot of people. He's one of these obscure coaches out of nowhere. I mean, I watched Chef Wed at the start of the season. They were terrible. And he's got them looking all right. So he'll be on a lot of lists, I think. But whether he's the man to take Sunderland to the Premier League is another thing, isn't it? It's an interesting one. You know some Wednesday fans, don't you? So
yeah, but
sure they'd be upset
by
that.
It's one of these things that we've talked about before. And you've just mentioned a whole list of them when... So a manager does a decent job at one place, his stock just like shoots up. But you know, how much do you take from that one job, or do you take someone who's been successful at a few places? I don't know. It's sometimes one manager fits one place perfectly.
Yeah. Jay, like the letter says, should Dodds turn us around and we get playoffs? Are our players physically ready to go up? No. I don't believe so.
No, I mean, looking at the three who went up last season, what happened to them, and looking at us, where we stand at the minute, it would take a big summer to get us strong enough.
Saying physically, like that's why Luton look the most ready for the Premier League out of the three teams who went up. Because Luton can rough teams up, so not at all. We'd have to have a massive summer to even compete. Yeah. Josh Gibson says, what coach/manager do you think the club will look at next? I think we've talked about this, but... possibly someone we've never heard of. It's either going to be someone we've never heard of or somebody who's done something. Like they might actually push the boat out and get a Steve Cooper, but I genuinely don't know. Hannah says, how much longer will KLD/KS, as in Christian Speakman, be at the club? Well, how long is a piece of string?
Yeah.
Depends.
I don't know. I think KLD knows. I think he's more than happy with stuff on the footballing side. I think in some ways, when he came in, I'm not sure getting the playoffs last season, were we ahead of schedule? So I think he's perfectly happy with how we are on the footballing side, and I can't see that changing anytime soon.
No, Michael Bell says, do you think based on KLD's latest comments that the owners were really targeting promotion, or are they playing a longer game and hoping a few seasons of first team football for these young players will develop a better team capable of getting promoted and staying up? I don't know what you think, Chris, but I think that second comment there is more apt. I think they're ready to strap in for another year, or at least they were ready to strap in this season and go next year when it's going to be a weaker championship and we're going to be in a better position financially, because let's face it, we're going to lose Jack Clark, but that's going to bring in a lot of money that we can invest in the team. That, coupled with the league being weaker, I think would tell you they're looking at this year and thinking it's a hard league this year, squad's probably not ready, but after a good summer, bringing in a good coach, spending some of that Clark money, we'd be in a better position for it next year, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I just think, and I've said this before, that if you get the chance of promotion, you don't turn it down, because you don't know when, you know, who's to say that we have a massive drop off a cliff next season and we're in the position that Swansea are in. You just never know. You could have an injury crisis and get dragged down the league. You just never know what's going to happen. And look, if the chance of us doing it's there, and you know, if you do get that pile of money and you use it properly and you manage to stay up that first season, and then you've got more to invest the season after, I mean, you know, it's worth it. So I don't think you ever go have a plan of not getting promoted. It's going to be a huge summer if we do. We literally have to, or accept we're going to have a season like, you know, we've had in the past. We've had real struggles in the Premier League.
Yeah, Roka Rodeo has said, is it only me that thinks Will Still will be just as big a gamble as Beale?
Yeah, that's what we said.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, we said that when he was linked last time, didn't we? You know, he's
100%.
Very unimpressive CV, if I'm honest. I think, and this is something I've said a lot of times, the only reason anyone really knows who he is because he became a meme for not having his coaching badges. So he was the manager of a team, 31-year-old, without his badges and doing well. And I think that's like commendable, but like, I don't think that's the guy you gamble on. I just don't. I think it'll be someone else. And for me, he talks too much. Like he's done a lot of interviews around the last time he was linked with us. Since our job's come up again, he's done more interviews talking about how he would like to come to England. But it's getting his name in the papers and it's getting people talking about him. And you can understand it to a degree. But I don't know. There's something I just don't like about that one. I think it would bomb, just like this one has. So I kind of agree with Roka Rodeo. But if he did get the job, of course, we'd support him. But I just can't see it being him. I don't know. I might be wrong. Adam Miller says, how are you deciding who gets to go to Benidorm for pre-season? We haven't talked about this. It looks like we're going to Benidorm. There's no way I'm getting away from my house with a one-year-old baby in it for a week on the piss in Benidorm watching Sunderland, unfortunately, unless I take the family. So, yeah, that's not going to happen for me, unfortunately. But we will send somebody there, I'm sure. There'll be a couple of daft lads from Rota Report. Whether they do any podcasts or whether they just, you know, end up on the strip and on the piss for 3 days and Sticky Vicky's granddaughter doing a show and all. You've got all that shit, yeah. Maybe they could get Sticky Vicky on the pitch at half time, keep people happy. Or at least not, well, maybe not Sticky Vicky, she's dead now, but maybe one of her relatives. Anyways, moving on. Daniel McGuinn has said, what's your favourite breed of dog? Now, that's just caught us by surprise because I'm just reading down the list. But what is your favourite breed of dog, Chris? Do you have one?
No, I'm not sure I've got one, to be honest.
Yeah, I'll go toy poodles, I've got two of them. Mitch Monty says, if Sunderland were to get the playoffs and go up, would you keep or sell Jack Clark? Well, if we go up, I'd keep him, of course. I think he'd stay as well. But if we don't go up, he's gone, isn't he? And we're not going up.
I don't think we've got a choice if we don't go up.
No, I don't. I think that's already decided. Will Still become... That is hard to read. Will Still become manager if he knows he won't get to buy his own players? Well, yeah, because kind of what he would be signing up to. Would he want to come to Sunderland? From what I've read about him at his French club, he hasn't got much say there. They've just been selling players from under him and weakening his squad in the last couple of windows. So I guess he's used to it. But I don't know. No real knowledge of whether he would take the job or not.
Yeah, I think that's the way most clubs are going now. So most coaches have got to accept that that's going to be the case.
Yep. Last question from Abdullah SZN on Twitter. Are we starting to regret letting Leon Diaco go? No. Unless you're just a fan of his mom on Instagram, because, you know, there we go.
You're anyway. On fire tonight, nah. Aren't you?
I know. Well, we go. That was the last question anyway. So thanks everyone who has sent those in. They were meant to be quick fire, and I think we possibly took about 12 or 13 minutes there. So we need to brush up on our quick fire-ness. Anyways, cheers, Chris. Thanks, mate. Thanks for joining us always.
No worries.
Cheers to listeners. We will be back with a review of Swansea, and if we win, Chris is allowed on, because he hasn't been on to review a win in, feels like, about a year. No, so
stick up your ass.
We'll get you on. You just, people are just going to associate you with misery now.
I said we'll win.
Thanks, everyone, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.